Imagine that if every time an auto company built a car, they had to create almost all the parts and assemblies in a completely custom way without many standard or interchangeable parts. Not very efficient, but for a long time, this was how software design and development operated. And it's only within recent years that companies have started to invest in design systems. We happen to like Nathan Curtis's 10-second definition of a design system. It reads, "A design system offers a library of visual style, components, and other concerns documented and released by an individual, team, or community as code and design tools, so that adopting products can be more efficient and cohesive." In other words, design systems provide product designers and developers with reusable, interchangeable components that make the product design process more efficient and repeatable, and are a critical part of scaling design at a growing company. As a design systems manager at GitHub, Diana Mounter is intimate with all the ins and outs of creating and rolling out design systems. In this episode, we speak with her about why businesses need design systems now more than ever, how to sell the idea of a design system to your team or company, and some tips and tricks for gaining adoption of a design system. Enjoy this episode with Diana, and thanks for listening.
As a Design Better listener, we think you'll enjoy Tools and Weapons. It's a podcast hosted by Microsoft's Vice Chair and President, Brad Smith. Brad's conversations with leaders at the intersection of the promise and perils of the digital age touch on some fascinating topics, like the new AI economy and how AI is becoming a tool in the battle against hunger. On a recent episode, Brad was taken to Venice, Italy, where he connected with Yves Ubelmannhoff of Iconum. It's a startup that specializes in 3D digitization of endangered cultural heritage sites. During the relative quiet of the pandemic, Eve and his team used drone capture photography and some powerful AI tools to create a full-scale digital twin of Venice, a city threatened by climate change and over-tourism. How cool is that? On Tools and Weapons, Eve tells Brad how he's using this incredible technology to help preserve some of the world's most endangered cultural heritage sites in pristine detail so they can be studied and appreciated for generations to come. To stay current on some of the most innovative people working with AI today, you should subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever finer podcasts are served.
Diana Mounter, Design Systems Manager at GitHub, is a designer based in Brooklyn, New York. She specializes in design systems and has a background in user-centered design. Diana currently works at GitHub and leads their design systems team that maintains a design system called Primer. In her spare time, she organizes the New York City Design Systems Coalition and writes and speaks about design, code, and working with people. She's a co-author of the Design Systems Handbook, where she wrote about how to encourage adoption of your design system, publishing and distributing methods and considerations for making your design system public versus private. Diana's Twitter handle is very interesting. It's Broccolini. Diana Mounter, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So clearly you are all in on design systems, and we want to talk about that, the details of that. But we've got to ask about the Twitter handle, and what's the origin story of Broccolini?
I don't know how quickly I can tell it, but basically it's from when I was back in Australia, and broccolini wasn't such a famous vegetable at the time. And I thought it was a pretty amusing and kind of uninventive for a vegetable name. And long story short, that's how I ended up being my Twitter handle and my nickname, actually, through a lot of friends. So.
Okay, rewind. What the heck is broccolini? I don't even know what that is.
It's a type of vegetable. I forgot. I should probably know you. The name of the family, but it's the same family that broccoli is in, but it's a different type. It's got longer stems and
cruciform vegetables, I think, or something like that, isn't it? Like
broccoli. It's a classier type of broccoli.
Okay,
you charge more for it in a restaurant.
A lot of people think it's my. A lot of people think it's my name, and it's pretty funny because it does sound like a real name.
That's fantastic. So let's talk about design systems here. And I mean, you're clearly, this is what you think about every day, all day. your working hours, probably all of your waking hours, you're thinking about design systems. How did you find your way into this space?
I think that really started when I was at Etsy. I think a few things had led to me being interested in this space. To me, it's a way to deal with, like, I guess UX debt in a way. I found, like, especially working on large scale applications, where a lot of people have touched the design and touched the code, after a while, it kind of might lose its sort of holistic, consistent approach. And codifying that in a design system was a way for me, I guess, to tackle that. And I found, because I found, like, a lot of projects, I would spend a large proportion of the project dealing with, like, existing problems before being able to get on to, like, you know, a new feature or whatever the purpose of a project was. And I think one of the roles that design systems plays is to like solve problems that can be solved and be solved once and share the answers to that, I guess. And instead of people sort of rehashing and relearning or reinventing the same thing.
So we're curious on your perspective, why are design systems such a hot topic? They're so hot right now, like Hansel and Zoolander. And why do you think businesses need them now more than ever?
I mean, I think we do work in, you know, working in the design industry, we do like to sort of pick up on hot topics or buzzwords for things sometimes. And it kind of worries me a little bit with design systems because, you know, to me, it's there's a genuine need, and I'll get into that in a second. But I worry that because it is such a hot topic, then people can't become desensitized to it, or it gets mis-explained or mispurposed and things like that. So that happens with a lot of things, I think, in our industry. So I worry about that a little bit. I think the interesting thing is that design systems aren't exactly new. It's just like that terminology and what they've come to meant now is sort of been reinvented or repurposed a bit. So a lot of companies had standards manuals or style guides and things like that. But I think because of working in tech, we've started to figure out how to codify that in code as well as in design. And then through companies like Salesforce and their Lightning Design System, I think that the term design systems became popular.
So take us back to the end of 2013, December. You joined Etsy as a product designer, presumably not to come shape the design system, but to design Etsy as a product. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, it just happened that the team I joined were kicking off quite a large redesign project. And so as part of that, we built a new style guide. Mm. But yeah, I came to Etsy as a product designer and with a goal. I was really, really interested in the sort of intersection of user research and using that, how that fitted into the product design workflow or the product development workflow, not just on the design side of things. And then found myself working on the style guide with a group of designers on our team. And then I guess I got kind of more and more interested in that. And I also, for me, had an interest in the development side, the sort of building of the style guide as well. And learning about new approaches to CSS, like object-oriented CSS and things like that, sparked my interest. It was a new area for me to learn. So I think that's also partly what drew me towards it.
And was there, did something happen where your team, who you're working on this redesign, I mean, you could have just redesigned the site and done it without a design system, but was there something that was pressing where you felt like, okay, this is an insane amount of design debt. The product's not as performant as it could be. Any sort of tipping point where you felt like this is the right way to go?
Yeah, I think the trigger was partly that we needed to make that part of the site responsive. So we were working on the seller tools, so what the sellers at Etsy use to manage their shop and orders and things like that. And a lot of people are like building things. They're in their workshop, perhaps. Maybe they're making jewelry or something. They use their phone to like check what's happening because it's easy and accessible. So they're not always sat like next to a laptop or a computer all day. And so making it responsive was important. And the current style guide wasn't really built with responsiveness in mind. So that was one of the big triggers. Also, because it was a redesign, we didn't have to deal with previous technical debt. We had kind of like green fields. We could do something new. And I mentioned it in the design assistant handbook, but Dan Moore has a good sort of way to evaluate pilot projects, and in a way that became like our pilot project because it was a redesign and we could start fresh.
Thank you, Dan Moore.
Yes.
Did you have to convince anybody that a design system was the right way to go? Was there anyone like outside of the design team who had to buy into the idea, or did you have enough autonomy where you could make that decision for yourselves and press forward?
I mean, I feel like I was lucky in that I didn't have to really have that discussion to convince people. Some of that had happened before I had started already, so it was like already agreed upon that, yeah, it was an opportunity to refresh styles. I think the bigger challenge was in adoption and sort of making sure we built something that could be used by other teams, and then also teaching them and gaining traction with those other teams. I think it wasn't hard to say, hey, we needed to refresh our design. So there wasn't really that kind of struggle. And we also weren't really calling it design systems at the time. We were just, that was a little before they became so hot right now. So it was more like, oh, we have a style guide. We need a better, we need to iterate on this. We need a better version. So it wasn't too difficult to get buy-in at that stage. We were lucky.
So Diana, what I'm curious about, what are some of your favorite tips and tricks for gaining adoption of design system? Because you're not only responsible for helping create the one at Etsy, but also when you moved over to GitHub, you helped out with the formation of one there. So you've probably had to, you know, do a lot of convincing outside the design team that it's an effective way to work. So what are some of your tips and tricks? And also, what are some of the pitfalls that people should look out for when they're trying to get folks to adopt a system?
I think that it's been different for me at GitHub compared to Etsy. The thing that's consistent between both those experiences is it's really valuable to develop, like build a small set of like champions, I guess. So a small group of people that are already perhaps like a bit already enthusiastic about this and excited for it, and to work with them and help them really learn the ins and outs of how to use the design system so that they become, it's a bit like train the trainer, so that they become the people that then advocate it for it elsewhere. I think that's really important because it just sort of helps spread that through teams. The other thing that was really important at Etsy was a really easy to use, low barrier prototyping environment. So we we created that then. That acted as a place to learn the style guide and to make it easy to just focus on learning how the CSS worked and not worrying about the other parts of like production code. At GitHub, it's really been, and perhaps this is probably my pro tip to people, is just to attack it from all angles. So find as many opportunities to communicate that there is a design system, that there's people there that are willing to help you in how to use it. And that goes really far, because a lot of people will just be really excited that, oh, wow, there's something that tells me how to put all this stuff on the front end together. There's something that tells me what styles I should use for this situation versus that. At GitHub, we've made sure that we communicate with teams in lots of different ways. So that could be in code via pull requests. That can be via posting blog posts and our internal kind of team blog. It even just by having a Slack channel so that people can find people to talk to about this thing and learn from them directly. A lot of different touch points, really. And I think every organization is going to be slightly different in how they communicate and what really sticks. So you've got to kind of figure that out. But definitely attacking it from all angles so that people can't not know that there is a design system. And you have to make time to help people as well. It's something that I guess I didn't know going into this, is like how much time we'd be spent communicating with people is a really important part of it.
I was just going to rewind for just a moment and get you to tell us the story of, so you moved from Etsy over to GitHub, again, as a product designer. And then what were the conditions at GitHub in 2016 that made it clear it was time to invest in design systems? Was that something that was evident when you were brought on, or did it kind of evolve as you started your job there?
Right from when I was interviewing at GitHub, we talked about design systems as being like an important pillar of design. And so I that was really important to me. Is at the time I was like, not necessarily looking to work directly on design systems, though I was really interested in it. What was more important to me is that a company had a design system and valued it as part of the design organization, I guess. And so I started as a product designer, but didn't stay in that role for very long. As when I got there, I started to dig around in Primer, which is our design system, and I saw a lot of problems that I had seen, I guess, at Etsy. It wasn't very quick. It wasn't very easy for me to quickly build out designs with the existing system, and there was a lot of things that weren't documented. So I just naturally just started talking to other designers who I'd found or been told had an interest in improving the state of our style guide, and then bringing this to the design leads. And I suggested, hey, why don't we just start meeting? You know, we can start chipping away at this stuff in our spare time. And it quickly became a lot more than a side project. And I was then able to move on to it full time. But it really came about, I think, because of a mix of things. One, it was like a bit of a painful process implementing design. Because of the fact that lots of things were missing from our design system. Two, we had a couple of new designers start, which I think is always good. You got fresh insights, right? And they're not bogged down by the why we haven't done that thing in the past kind of situation. And we had several people who were trying to solve problems for the design system from different angles. So we had some marketing designers trying to pull out bits that worked for their marketing sites that weren't working, they didn't need in like the product. So having a bunch of enthusiastic people and things getting to kind of a tipping point in like, this is painful to work with, helped sort of let us have a full-time team, I guess. But it started off very grassroots.
How does a design system change a company like GitHub? I mean, there was a design system before, maybe not as refined as it is today, and maybe not as utilized as it is today. But, you know, GitHub, a company that clearly has a strong understanding of engineering and also a good reputation for design, but you introduce this new, more robust design system. How does it change the velocity of the work that you guys can do, the culture, the way that you think about work?
I think one of the big impacts is being able to get further without design help. So for an engineer, they can get pretty far in building out a prototype or a first pass at a new feature without design help. So that's one of like the big benefits, I think, of having a design system. It doesn't mean you don't need a designer. It's just that they'll be able to maybe get further than they previously could without you. So that's been one of the impacts. The other thing, which was one of our big goals, was the time it takes to flesh out a design and implement it. So that sort of design to development workflow, we tried to build our system in a way that made it easy to sort of quickly try different changes, try different layouts and things with. We made it something that was quick to internalize by following simple things like class naming conventions, so that people start to memorize them instead of having to look up every single thing that they want to do. Also not having to write so much CSS because the styles exist already. So we kind of reduced the time it spent to write markup and implement those designs. I still think we can go a lot further with that, but that's definitely been one of our goals and one of the ways that it changed the design to development process. You mentioned something else there. You said how it changed how we design. Is that what you said?
Yeah, I'm just curious if, you know, having a design system, if it has a cultural impact. You know, it definitely, it makes things faster, reduces debt, you know, improves performance. But once you have a really great design system, like, how does it change the way, I don't know, the head of engineering thinks or other people in the organization? Does it influence the way they think about design?
That's a big question. And I can only say what I think and not necessarily what they think.
Sure, yeah. I
think it's gotten everyone sort of thinking, hey, we need to all work towards like a certain standard. We need to make sure we're designing with the same language, right? So I think in that way, it's changed, influenced the culture at GitHub. I think having permanent people, like full-time people working on design systems, has been one of the biggest impacts. People are really excited that we take it that seriously, that we'll dedicate full-time people to it. So I think that definitely leaves an impression on the rest of the company that our design department really care about this, that they'll so much they'll dedicate like full-time people to this. And I think GitHub is appreciate it from an engineering standpoint because we've got a huge engineering org and they understand the benefits from not repeating code or having consistency, having code style rules, things like that. So I think it's sort of fairly easy for them to get why, oh, this makes sense. And I think for some people it's really helped demystify some of the side of things of working on front end where they'd struggled before. They're like, oh, it's so great. I can go to this this style guide documentation and it tells me how to do it. And one of our engineers even said, I feel like I'm kind of cheating and I almost don't want to tell everyone that this exists because it's so easy. So, Yeah, I mean, I think it's still creeping up into the sort of upper management and upper leadership. But I know that from a product design perspective, it's really important for them to have a team, like making sure that this is easy for everybody to work with. So, yeah, it's really nice to hear people in director roles and things like that being like, we need to invest in design systems. That's great.
Support for Design Better comes from our friends at CrashPlan. Visit crashplan.com/designbetter for 50% off your first year of CrashPlan. From my daughter's first birthday to my son's first soccer game, if you're like me, you have thousands of precious family photos that only exist in digital form. That's why I've been using CrashPlan for a decade and a half now to back up all my important files. CrashPlan works efficiently in the background while you work, encrypting and sending all your new or changed files up to their secure cloud server every 15 minutes. And they make it simple to restore some or all of your data. And with unlimited version retention, CrashPlan can also be your ultimate rewind button. Businesses of all sizes benefit from CrashPlan's multi-tenant capabilities. Buy as many user licenses as you need and easily manage them all under one account. Go to crashplan.com/designbetter for 50% off your first year of CrashPlan. That's crashplan.com/designbetter, all one word, for 50% off your first year. Back up better with CrashPlan. Support for Design Better comes from Uplift Desk, creators of office furniture designed to help you work better and live healthier. It's been estimated that the average person will spend one-third of their life at work. Sobering, huh? That's roughly 90,000 hours at work over your lifetime. Imagine what happens to your body if you're working with bad posture and poor circulation. It can be devastating on your health. That's why Eli and I love Uplift Desk and their ergonomic desks and chairs. Uplift Desk makes solid, well-constructed standing desks that you can customize to match your workspace. And they have a wide variety of incredibly ergonomic chairs. My personal favorite is the Human Scale Freedom Chair. I'm sitting in it right now. For professionals like us, investing in the right tools, especially our desk and chair, is essential. You're going to get free shipping, free returns with free return shipping, and an industry-leading 15-year warranty that covers the complete desk. Eli and I love their products, and we know that you will too. Give it a try. Go to upliftdesk.com and use code DESIGNBETTER5 for 5% off your order. That's UPLIFT desk.com to get 5% off your entire order with promo code DESIGNBETTER5. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. When we spoke with Seth Godin on Design Better, he said something very interesting. Everyone's got a noise in their head. You, me, your boss, everyone. That noise in our head is self-doubt, confusion, fear, anxiety, all of that. It's part of the human experience, and it can hold us back. Therapy is one of the best ways to work through it all, to quiet the unproductive noise and develop positive mental health. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and to work with your schedule. BetterHelp can help you get the support that you need. Visit BetterHelp.com/designbetter today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/designbetter.
Diana, the design system at GitHub is open source. And why is that important? Does that also tie into the culture there? Or what are some of the reasons you made that decision?
Yeah, it's been open sourced for a while. When I got here, we kind of took parts of it back in-house and rejigged it and reorganized it and made a mess and put it back together again and then open sourced it again. GitHub is, you know, it's about open source, right? And so it is part of our culture and our values that, like, if something can be shared so that it might help other people, then we'll share it. So that's one reason. It's just part of how GitHub likes to work. The other reason is that I think there are some benefits from treating it like an open source project. Having it not be embedded in GitHub.com's code is helpful for us because it puts an intentional barrier there to making changes. Like when it was living inside in our monorepo, like anyone could change it, and if it was people who didn't really realize that actually changing this one thing here affects things everywhere, then that could cause problems. So while we want people to find it easy to contribute, we want a little kind of barrier there, which is really about just sort of thinking about the impact of those changes. The other reason for us is that GitHub.com is not the only website that uses our design system. We have a lot of other satellite sites, and we're actually working to pull more parts of the application into separate repositories so that it's a little easier to work with. And so we have to distribute this same design system to multiple different places. And so we could have done that without making it open source, but it's kind of like, well, why not? The other benefit from having it open source is, of course, that other people, members of the public or whatever, might come across it and be like, hey, I know how to fix this thing, or I think this will be better if we do it this way. And so other people can contribute. So that's another great reason to have it be open sourced, I think.
And as just a quick follow-up to that, what are some of the things companies should consider if they're trying to make that decision around open source versus a private system?
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that some companies, that might not be the best thing for them. And I think there's different levels to open sourcing. I think, or maybe I should frame that as there's different ways to make your system public versus private. So we open sourced ours, but we could have just say, we could have like made just the documentation public and not the code, or we could have just linked to a zip download link or something, but we distribute everything via NPM. We also, a lot of companies are using things like Storybook, which just display the components, so you're not really giving the documentation. Maybe you're not even showing the code, but you're saying, here's the things we've decided to codify as components, which is just maybe an interesting reference point for other companies. So I think thinking of public versus private should be thought of as a scale, not just like black or white. And choosing what combination works for you, I think it is, that's what you've got to do, like what's right for you. I think there is an overhead with open sourcing. You may get an influx of requests and issues posted. We really don't find that we have, you know, quite a lot of stars and people using it externally, but we don't find the volume of issues or pull requests so much that it causes a problem. There isn't that many. Some companies worry that people can too easily copy their styles. I know that was a concern for Mina Markham, who worked on Pantsuit for Hillary Clinton's campaign. She's done a few talks on that. And they had people making kind of, I guess, fake replica sites and giving them the design system would have made that, giving them the code for it would have made it just that much easier. GitHub has had kind of copycats a little in the past, or people like copying those styles, but it's not the same level of seriousness for us. It's something that they could do if they inspected and checked what CSS we were using anyway. So we decided that wasn't a big enough problem to make public. But yeah, that could be a genuine concern for other people.
For our listeners who are, you know, maybe at that tipping point where, you know, they're the designer championing the idea of a design system, and they're trying to get buy-in, how do they go about doing that? How do they get buy-in for, what's the best way to make the case for, we need to invest in a design system?
I think it's about showing what problems it solves, and each company might have a slight different type of thing that's a really big problem for them. At GitHub, it was the time it took to implement designs. it could be a slightly different problem at other companies. So I think talking about why you need this thing and what problem it's solving and in the context of your company is the best way to go about it. I think if you go, hey, everyone's got design systems and talk about the general things that people that work on design systems know, which is like, oh, it like codifies your language in a design language in a consistent way and creates one source of truth. Those are all important too, but I think kind of tapping into like a real everyday problem at your company is going to make it more real for the people that work there and give them a sort of practical scenario that they know that this thing will solve. So to me, that's like, I think that's the best way to go about it. It's difficult though. I think this is a question that comes up a lot, and I'm sure over the years as an industry, we'll come up with better solutions to this. And I also think that just by the fact that design systems are being talked about now is helping. I think it becoming sort of the norm is helping companies accept that this is something that they should have. So I things like this podcast and the design systems book and people open sourcing design systems all just helps someone in a company somewhere go, hey, look, this company is doing it. This company is doing it. This company that's just kind of a similar size to us or doing a similar thing to us is doing it. So I think that helps too.
And if and when people get buy-in, how should it be staffed? Because that seems to be a key thing as well, like how a design system is staffed. You talked about arriving at GitHub and kind of stepping your way into a full-time role, but is a full-time team needed for a design system?
It depends on the size of your company, really, and what stage you're at, the size of your design team. But I think it's if you don't have dedicated full-time people working on it, it's really hard for people to do it part-time because the timelines for design systems work are often really very different to like feature development. Because when you're working on design systems, you're kind of looking, you're taking the zoomed out view, taking a holistic approach. You're thinking, how does this component work everywhere? Or how does our color system work everywhere? Whereas when you're working on a feature, you're kind of more zoomed in to that thing. Not saying you shouldn't also be like, how does this fit into this world? But I think it means different timelines, and it's very hard to sort of do the deep work, take time to really explore the right answer when you're trying to also work on feature development. So that will often mean that design systems work gets kind of deprioritized and sort of pushed to the bottom of the priority pile because it doesn't have like that kind of like we need to ship this by then type thing. So yeah, I found myself in that position a couple of times, and it's not really very good for the development of the design system or for people's happiness, I guess, as well, because it's kind of stressful to switch between, try and switch between the two.
So earlier you mentioned some resources that are helping gain more awareness around design systems. Are there any other books or blogs that you've followed over the years or read that have been helpful as you've kind of honed your skills?
Recently, and this might be going more into research and some of the technical side, but I really like Programming Design Systems by Rune Madsen. It's a really nice, it's an in-progress kind of book, and it's a deep dive into lots of different areas of design systems, and he adds new kind of sections and chapters every now and then. So I really like that. But it's definitely sort of looking at what can you program, I guess, but with the sort of research behind it. I really read a lot of the color section because that's something that I've been particularly interested in recently. So I definitely would recommend that. And the good thing is that it keeps getting new additions every now and then. Some other things. Recently, Gina Ann started a design systems publication on Medium. And so there's been some nice books or articles, sorry, added there. So that's another one to follow. I really like, in terms of like physical books, I really like, I think this is a thing that many people working in design systems do, is collecting the old graphic standards manuals. Admittedly, I don't necessarily read them cover to cover, but they're beautiful pieces of work and sometimes really great like sources of inspiration. But some of them go into really deep details. I'm trying to remember that one I've got on my bookshelf right now, which is the grid systems book. So there's like, yeah, some really nice, beautiful books, but also they have, you know, like I said earlier, design systems not new. And so it's good to sort of look at what's happened in the past. Obviously, people should read the Design Systems Handbook, which I helped write.
Absolutely.
I feel like I'm going to think of like a lot of other blogs and books and things after this and be like, oh, I should have said that one. But
that's okay. We can always add it. We'll have a little summary and we can throw some links in there if you think of some more.
Yeah, I probably could. I should also plug the Design Systems Coalition that I do a chapter of in New York, but that Gina Ann started in San Francisco. We record most of ours, so it's not an article or a book, but it's sometimes a good source of information, watching the video or looking through the slides.